prove that God is the true God, and for them to follow him, and the king of Israel is after him. Pick up in chapter 19 of 1 Kings, verse 1. Ahab told Jezebel all that Elijah had done, also how he had executed all the prophets with the sword. Then Jezebel sent a messenger to Elijah, saying, "So let the gods do to me, and more also, if I do not make your life as the life of one of them by tomorrow about this time." Pretty powerful words. How do you think Elijah felt? She's after him. Verse 3. And when he saw that, Elijah, he arose and ran for his life, went to Beersheba, which belongs to Judah, and left his servants there. But he himself went a day's journey into the wilderness and came and sat down under a broom tree or a juniper tree. And he prayed that he might die and said, "It is enough. Now, Lord, take my life, for I am no better than my father's." Then as he lay and slept under a broom tree, suddenly an angel touched him and said to him, "Arise and eat." Then he looked, and there by his head was a cake baked on coals and a jar of water. So he ate and drank and lay down again. And the angel of the Lord came back the second time, touched him and said, "Arise and eat, because the journey is too great for you." So he arose and ate and drank, and he went in the strength of that food 40 days and 40 nights as far as Horeb, the mountain of God. He's still on the run from Jezebel as he fears for his life. Verse 9. And there he went into a cave and spent the night in that place. And behold, the word of the Lord came to him, and he said to him, "What are you doing here, Elijah?" So he said, "I have been very zealous for the Lord God of hosts, for the children of Israel have forsaken your covenant, torn down your altars, and killed your prophets with the sword. I alone am left, and they seek to take my life." Then he said, God said, "Go out and stand on the mountain before the Lord." And behold, the Lord passed by in a great and a strong wind toward into the mountains and broke the rocks in pieces before the Lord. But the Lord was not in the wind. And after the wind, an earthquake, but the Lord was not in the earthquake. And after the earthquake, a fire, but the Lord was not in the fire. And after the fire, a still, small voice. So it was when Elijah heard it that he wrapped his face in his mantle and went out and stood in the entrance of the cave. Suddenly a voice came to him and said, "What are you doing here, Elijah?" And he said, "I have been very zealous for the Lord God of hosts, because the children of Israel have forsaken your covenant, torn down your altars, and killed your prophets with a sword. I alone am left, and they seek to take my life." All the things that Elijah had been through, and all the things he had done for the Lord, and all the effort he had put into trying to save Israel, and he feels a lot like I would have, I think, and a lot like you would, I think. Why do I keep going? Why? They're after me now, Lord. They're after me. And he's had his pity party. But I want you to look and see in verse 15, the first word that God said to him. Then the Lord said to him, "Go. Return on your way to the wilderness of Damascus, and when you arrive, anoint Hazael as king over Syria. Also you shall anoint Jehu the son of Nimshi as king over Israel, and Elisha the son of Shaphat and of Mahola, you shall anoint as prophet in your place. It shall be that whoever escapes the sword of Hazael, Jehu will kill, and whoever escapes the sword of Jehu, Elisha will kill. Yet I have reserved 7,000 in Israel, all whose knees have not bowed to Baal, and every mouth that has not kissed him." After all of the pity party, after all of the feeling sorry for yourself, after all of the things that Elijah had been through, after all the battles he fought, when he felt bad, what did God say? He is element. I don't want to hear that. He didn't want to say, "Hey," you've done a good job, hang in there a little bit longer. He said, go, and told him what he needed to do. And that's what we need to do. Just by memory, I've got all those weird ones. Do you remember how many men left Egypt that were fighting age? Which means they were at least 20, 600, 3,000, 750. And about that same number entered into after the 40 years of wilderness that they... And that's just the men of fighting age. That's not the young children. That's not the older. That's not the women. That's not the daughters. That was the men of fighting age. And we talked about in prior classes how that could have been 1 to 2 to 3 million people. I have reserved 7,000 in Israel. Go teach them. Persistence in doing something despite difficulty or delay in achieving success. Elijah, you go. You've got work to do. You've got work to do. Elijah's story ends much differently than ours will end. In 2 Kings, the second chapter, we won't take the time to read all of the chapter or all of the section, but in the first 11 verses of 2 Kings 2, we see Elijah and Elisha together. But in verse 11, then it happened as they continued on and talked, that's Elijah and Elisha, that suddenly a chariot of fire appeared with horses of fire and separated the two of them. Elijah went up by a whirlwind into heaven. Elijah was no more. You think Elijah went and did what God had him to do? He did, for God wouldn't save him. There's more to that story with Elijah, but for the sake of time, we won't go through all of the accomplishments and all of the things that Elijah did. But just know he faced difficulty in his life, and he persevered. What happens to the story if Noah doesn't do? What's the opposite? What would have happened if Noah hadn't done what he was charged with? He'd have had a different fate. What would have happened if Elijah didn't do what he was charged with and press on? He would have had a different fate. We could have talked about almost any character of the Bible, especially in the Old Testament. We could have talked about Moses. We could have talked about Job. We could have talked about any of the prophets, because Israel and Judah both failed, even though they were there and knew from men of God what was going to happen. They all failed, but they all persevered and did what they were charged with doing. Let's move to another character that we know in Acts, the 14th chapter. We know his story a little bit better just because we talked about it a little bit more. The Apostle Paul. While you're turning to Acts, the 14th chapter, just to remind you, we met him as Saul of Tarsus. He was persecuting Christians. He was on his way to Damascus to kill and bring back and kill those that were... following the new way, if you will. It was different. He was doing what he was taught to do, and he had not learned this new way. He's saved. He begins preaching. But remember, he had to disappear. He had to stay gone for 3 years. He tells his story in Galatians, and toward the end of the first chapter, he talks about having to stay gone for 3 years because he needed time to... The dust needed to settle. The people he were going to teach weren't going to be real receptive to him, correct? So he makes it through that. But one of my favorite stories of Paul, and one of my favorite stories, period, takes place in the 14th chapter of Acts. In verse 1, it happened in Iconium that they went together to the synagogue of the Jews and so spoke that a great multitude, both of the Jews and of the Greeks, believed. But the unbelieving Jews stirred up the Gentiles and poisoned their minds against the brethren. Therefore they stayed there a long time, speaking boldly in the Lord, who was bearing witness to the word of his grace, granting signs and wonders to be done by their hands. But the multitude of the city was divided, part sided with the Jews and part with the apostles. And when a violent attempt was made by both the Gentiles and Jews with their rulers to abuse and stone them, they became aware of it and fled to Lystra and Derbe. Get the picture. He's teaching in difficult circumstances. His physical safety is harmed, is in harm. Does he quit preaching and say, I give up? No. He continues doing what he's supposed to do. But he did do it in another location. But drop down to verse 19. Same chapter, verse 19. Then Jews from Antioch and Iconium came there, the places he had just been, and having persuaded the multitudes, they stoned Paul and dragged him out of the city, supposing him to be dead. However, when the disciples gathered around him, he rose up and went into the city. And the next day, he departed with Barnabas to Derbe. Persistence in doing something despite difficulty or delay in achieving success. He didn't give up. I hope I would have the strength and the faith to act the way he did, to get up and go back in the city. Can you imagine what lesson he taught just by his sheer presence and showing up? Can you imagine what his body must have looked like and what his body felt like and what he had to do to summon the strength just to get up and go back in that city? I hope I'd have the mental resolve to do that and to fight and to persevere and to get through. But what if men like Paul don't press on? What if we don't have these stories? What if men like him quit? Remember what he went through? We're not going to take the time to read this morning for sake of time, but take the opportunity to read 2 Corinthians 11 and start in verse 22 and go down through 33 and just paraphrasing some of it, how many times he was shipwrecked, how many times he was stoned, how many times he was in peril, and all of those things that he lists there. Do you know what he did as soon as he was able to? What God would have him do. Despite all those difficulties, despite all of those obstacles in his life, he continued on. But what happens if we don't have people like that that we can draw strength from? What's the world look like now? What would the world look like if we don't have the strength to carry on? If we just give up and say, okay, COVID, you win. Okay, sinners, you win. Okay, fill in the blanks, you win. What happens if we're not persistent? What happens if we don't persevere? Two things. One, we lose our soul. And two, we're not teaching others and living up to what we're supposed to do as Christians. The ultimate in perseverance is Christ himself. Matthew, the 27th chapter. Matthew, the 27th chapter. We're going to read, it's a fairly lengthy reading here. And I'm going to read all of this on the fly now since we need to... Since we've had internet problems, this is going to help prepare our minds as we partake of the Lord's Supper. This is the last point that we'll make and the last example that we'll look at today. But as we read this, try to put yourself in this position and be there and be a part of this. And as we partake of the Lord's Supper a little bit later this morning, remember what Christ did for us. Some of you like to read and follow along. which you're more than welcome to do. But if it works better for you and you like to close your eyes and daydream and picture this, feel free to do so. Matthew 27, verse 27. Then the soldiers of the governor took Jesus into the praetorium and gathered the whole garrison around him. And they stripped him and put a scarlet robe on him. When they had twisted a crown of thorns, they put it on his head and a reed in his right hand. And they bowed the knee before him and mocked him, saying, "Hail, King of the Jews!" Then they spat on him and took the reed and struck him on his head. And when they had mocked him, they took the robe off of him, put his clothes on him, and led him away to be crucified. Now as they came out, they found a man of Cyrene, Simon by name. Him they compelled to bear his cross. And when they had come to a place called Golgotha, that is to say, place of a skull, they gave him sour wine mingled with gall to drink. But when he had tasted it, he would not drink. Then they crucified him and divided his garments, casting lots, that it might be fulfilled which was spoken by the prophet. They divided my garments among them, and for my clothing they cast lots. Sitting down, they kept watch over him there, and they put up over his head the accusation written against him, "This is Jesus, the King of the Jews." Then two robbers were crucified with him, one on the right and another on the left. And those who passed by blasphemed him, wagging their heads and saying, "You who destroy the temple and build it in 3 days, save yourself. If you are the Son of God, come down from the cross." Likewise, the chief priest also, mocking with the scribes and elders, said, "He saved others, himself he cannot save. If he is the King of Israel, let him now come down from the cross, and we will believe him. He trusted in God, let him deliver him now if he will have him, for he said, 'I am the Son of God.'" Even the robbers who were crucified with him reviled him with the same thing. Now from the sixth hour to the ninth hour, there was darkness all over the land. And about the ninth hour, Jesus cried out with a loud voice, saying, "Eli, Eli, lama sabachthani," that is, my God, why have you forsaken me?" Some of those who stood there, when they heard that, said, "This man is calling for Elijah." Immediately one of them ran and took a sponge, filled it with sour wine, and put it on a reed, and offered it to him to drink. The rest said, "Let him alone. Let us see if Elijah will come save him." And Jesus cried out again with a loud voice and yielded up his spirit. Then behold, the veil of the temple was torn in two from top to bottom, and the earth quaked, and the rocks split, and the graves were opened, and many bodies of the saints who had fallen asleep were raised. And coming out of the graves after his resurrection, they went into the holy city and appeared to many. So when the centurion and those with him who were guarding Jesus saw the earthquake and the things that had happened, they feared greatly, saying, "Truly, this was the Son of God." From all the things we know he went through on this earth, we know he never sinned. We know he lived the perfect life. And we know he died a cruel death, as we just read. What's the world look like if he didn't do that? We don't have any hope. We don't have any hope of spending eternity with him. For all the things that he did, he did the Lord. Father's will. He did God's will. As he said many times, not my will, but thy will be done. There are a lot of things in this life that are difficult. We face a lot of uncertainty. We face a lot of criticism. We face a lot of trials. There's a lot of things that we go through that, we just say it's life. It happens. But never let us lose sight of not our will, but his will be done. That we persevere through whatever trials come our way. That we are persistent in doing something despite difficulty or delay in achieving success. Success for us is heaven. Success for us depends on us doing God's will. The last passage I'll leave with you is Hebrews, the 10th chapter, if you'll turn there. We'll begin in verse 35 in just a minute. Hebrews 10 and verse 35. But as I stand here and go through life, I can't quit on my family. I can't quit on my wife. I can't quit on my children. I can't quit on my parents. I can't quit on my family. Nor can you. We understand that. I can't quit on you. And you can't quit on me. And after what Jesus did for us, I can't quit on God. Nor can you afford to. Because he didn't quit on me. Hebrews, the 10th chapter, verses 35 and 36. Therefore, do not cast away your confidence, which has great reward. For you have need of endurance, so that after you have done the will of God, you may receive the promise. Heaven is the promise. But it takes doing the will of God. And it takes persistence to do that. It takes persistence and perseverance in face of difficult times to do what God has us to do. Don't quit. Don't quit on me. I won't quit on you. But don't quit on God. Don't quit on his plan. We offer after every sermon, we offer an opportunity that if you're not following God's will, whether that's because you're not a child or because your life's in error, if there's any way we can help, any way at all, we would invite you just to let us know that. And we'll help you in any way we can as we stand and sing the song that's been selected as we sing it for your encouragement.